Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report. Extremely convincing growls. The person making the growls is Ken Napsok, and I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and we're happy to be here talking Bad Batch. That was a great growl.
Oh, thank you. I've never really worked on my Rancor growls, but there you have it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that would terrify me. I mean, in the context of a fun podcast where I know you might make a noise, I feel safe, but otherwise I would just be screaming in terror.
I have a new... We'll talk about my Rancor feelings, which has always been positive, by the way, but now even more positive.
Even more positive Rancor feelings. Yeah, I mean, that could have been the name of this episode. It could have been positive Rancor feelings, question mark. But this is episode 5. It is titled Rampage, which I feel like is connected to the Rancor. It is written by Tamara Bechter Wilkinson. Apologies if I got that name wrong. And directed by Stuart Lee. It is about a 25-minute-ish episode, which there's been some shocking consistency when it comes to streaming shows' episode length. That these, there's the great kind of feature-length first episode, premiere. I was going to say pilot, but more premiere. And then they've all been about 25-ish minutes, a nice tight clip. So, Ken, Let's get into it. Let's get into your many rancor feelings. What was your overall reaction to Rampage? Did you love it, like it, wrestle with it like a rancor?
You know, I liked it. And here's, this is, we always joke every week. We're like, one of these weeks, we're not going to really like an episode or, you know, and we have a certain way at Force Center and those listening, a certain way to approach Star Wars. And I don't ever mean to finger wag or preach. And I know you don't either, Joseph, but I just feel we approach Star Wars in such a way that you always kind of can be rewarded and come away feeling great. And I will say this, this is probably the episode I at least connected with thus far. You know, maybe I can't help feel a little bit of the Mando kind of remix mission goals and that kind of stuff. However, there was so much that I love in this episode, particularly when I went back a second time. And there's these little moments with the group that we're following that just kind of proves that the show is working, because I'm here for the ride with them, and what happens to them, what they experience, what they go through, can rise and fall in terms of tension or plot or big galaxy ramifications or little moments. It doesn't matter. I'm there for them. I'm definitely there for Omega's growth. And that's what celebrating you love before focusing on what doesn't work for you is just continues to be rewarding for me, if that makes sense. And plus, we got the term rampaging adolescent rancor, and Rhea Perlman is now in Star Wars, and these are both great things.
Yeah, we got a great name for a young punk band. And yes, the Cheers takeover of the Star Wars galaxy continues. I was so thrilled. That voice sounded familiar, but I was caught up in the show. And then when the credits came, I was like, yes, yes. Yeah, we got Major Brent Derlin. We got, of course, Tobias Beckett. Now we got Sid. And now we just need them all in a bar together.
Yeah.
And we need Ted Danson.
Yes. Yeah. George Went Danson. I'll take those.
Ted Danson. I think Ted Danson is kind of a medium level Crimson Dawn guy. That's what I want to see. For me, I really love what you're saying about the way that we approach Star Wars is celebrate what we love. And if there is something that we're not sure about, that's kind of sometimes when we talk about things we disliked, I want to phrase it as disliked or questioned. Or wrestled with.
Right.
Because sometimes something that doesn't sit right at first is like, well, maybe if we kind of turn around and look at it from all angles and see another person's point of view, maybe we will come to enjoy it more. And even if we're like, yeah, no, that's never going to be for me. I'm never going to be a big fan of that. We still get something interesting out of turning around and looking at it from all angles, you know, and even for me, it's sometimes like, oh, wow, I really love understanding why other people like that. I won't, but now I feel like I understand some other people's perspective better.
Yeah. No, it's great. And like I said, this episode wasn't bad or anything I didn't like. It was just like, oh, okay. One of those episodes. Oh, okay. But then there's some giant empire, world building connecting to Solo stuff that I just, loved that was there. Not loved it. It's bad stuff, but, yeah. And then just the pure joy of a rampaging Rancor, that's something I just didn't think I needed. So yeah, anyways, that's kind of my overall thoughts. Like it, and there's some things to love.
Yeah, awesome. Well, we will dig into absolutely all of it. I really agree with you about one of the things that I really liked about this episode was the dynamics between the squad. The Clone Force 99 is just firing on all cylinders, and great stuff in this episode about Omega truly becoming a part of the unit, right? Yeah. I also was really happy. It was what I wanted to see, that it was a direct follow-up from last episode, because the Bad Batch has many different concerns, but the way Hunter stated it at the last episode of like, no, this is our priority right now, you know, if a bounty hunter is skilled as Fennec Shand is after us and we don't know who hired her, he didn't know Fennec Shand then. Like, we need to know who that bounty hunter is and who hired her. So I really liked that it was just a direct follow-up. I really loved just kind of action-wise that by the time we got to the rampaging adolescent rancor, that it had a real, like, Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon, watching cartoons at home or when I was a kid, we got to go to the library on some Saturday afternoons and watch an old movie, an old monster movie or an old action movie. So this just had like big Saturday kaiju monster fun energy, particularly when the Rancor and the Brizak were going at it. So
Yeah, sorry, I forgot to look it up.
Brezak. Yeah, yeah. So really, really like that. Obviously, this was another episode that had big ties to both Clone Wars era and original trilogy. And I like how much they're doing that of just kind of constantly reminding you that we are right in the beginnings of the in-between with all the Zygarian connection to it. Very specific arc in the Clone Wars, and then to lots of stuff with obviously Bib and Gamorreans and building to what the reality of the galaxy is during the original trilogy. That was really cool. And then I think the stuff that I didn't like dislike at all, but definitely like took a few turns around with, like I was wrestling a Rancor, is it does have, this whole show has had a little bit more Mandalorian vibes because it is, this is the first animated show that I think is extremely serialized where, yep, they're having one-off adventures, but those adventures are moving the big picture story forward, really tied together, even more so than I think like Rebels was for me. And chasing down these ongoing issues of who is Omega? What's up with Wrecker's headache? You know, who hired Fennec Shan? Can they rescue Crosshair? It's got all these big picture questions going through it. And it's had that sort of Mandalorian vibe of like, well, we got to go to one place to do one thing, but then we kind of have to help the person there. And this one was almost like meta to me. I don't think it was intended that way, but it almost felt meta. Like there's that great beat, which we'll talk more about, of Sid going like, yeah, you're being mercenaries now. You're doing mercenary stuff. Do you not know how this works? It was almost like Sid almost wanted to turn to the camera and go, have these guys even seen The Mandalorian? This is how it works. You land somewhere, you need something from someone, so you do something for them. That's the whole thing. And I think it works for me ultimately because it is Sid saying to the Bad Batch, you've entered this different world that people like Din Djarin know they're in, but you don't see that that's the way the galaxy is going to be, that that's the way your life's going to be.
Yeah, I like that take on it too. Slightly different, yeah. And it just feels the same. And look, it's so funny. This week, production timeline came up on Twitter.
Yeah.
Design of Fennec Shand, the animated design, almost predating The Mandalorian. But and it's like, that's just how it works. And I think most people understand that. But so it, to me, it isn't like, oh, this is like The Mando. This is just storytelling. And it's actually working very well. But yeah, you just kind of can't help. I even almost laughed and was like, hey, you need to do this to get that. I was like, yeah, exactly like you just said, Joseph. Like, didn't you stream that as well?
We've all been talking about it. We've kind of been making jokes about this, you know.
Did the Bad Batch not listen to the Mandalorian report?
Come on, you guys have a lot of time in your ship in the Havoc Marauder to just chill and listen to podcasts. Yeah, so overall, really liked it. Liked how much it is serialized. It is moving forward. The Mando vibe / direct storytelling similarities, you know, timeline be damned, production codes, that's the way we as an audience are experiencing them. They didn't bother me because I think it felt more like the possibility that this episode was really setting them up, that this is their new normal, that, you know, that I loved that end beat. Man, that was maybe one of my favorite things about the episode, is that beat where Sid says, you fellas must be pretty valuable. Don't worry, I'm good with secrets. And just that very concerned look from a dark and broody Hunter of like, what's this about? And almost to me, like, great, you know, kind of sharp ending, but also felt like to me, the possibility is that Sid is saying, I'll keep your secret if you're basically my hired muscle.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of an implication in that for me. And I wouldn't mind it. I liked Sid. I like that office. I wanted to spend some time in that office and look around some more.
Oh, yeah, there's some stuff going on in that office.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, it felt like a little bit like, even if they don't stay and work for Sid all the time, that she's going to be one of their main go-tos, you know, her saying you need money and friends, mostly money to get by. It felt a little bit like all these episodes have been questioning Bad Batch, going, well, how are we going to function? Who are we going to be in this new reality? What's our new normal? And this is the first kind of character and interaction that suggested some possibility of stability.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a paying gig, maybe.
They maybe got a paying gig that they can go back to. They can temp there. Yeah. Any other overall reactions before we dive into the big themes and ideas?
The only one, I almost want to get your thoughts on this. This episode specifically really reminded me of a Clone Wars episode, more than the episodes before, meaning just like, you know, the Zygerians are very Clone Wars-y, and they appear or are mentioned in a lot of parts of Star Wars, but a Rancor, a planet that we've heard before, and it had a Clone Wars vibe, and it, obviously it's tremendously connected, but beyond that, it just seemed like a Clone Wars episode, which I liked.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is just continues to be extremely Clone Wars-y, partially, I would imagine, influenced by the fact that it's almost all Clone Wars directors. Right. Long-term Clone Wars directors. But yeah, there's lots of things about it of just like the aesthetic, the structure, the guarantee that you will never not see a ship all the way land on a planet. You know, there's lots of things that just like, yeah, it's a very different story. It's focusing on different characters, but there's a lot in the style of the storytelling, the mix of comedy and action and heart that is Star Wars, but very specifically Clone Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So anyways, final thought for me now.
Okay, cool. Well, let's dive into the big themes and ideas. What for you is really at stake in this episode?
So, all right. So I started to go one way and it's very much there and definitely want to get your thoughts on it. And I love following you down the path of themes here. But then there was one way, something just kind of emerged to me, right or wrong. It grabbed me. The first thing, there's a lot about trust. The episode begins with Hunter, you know, having Omega kind of say the rules, which includes that trust no one but myself, which I think there's some truth to that, but I also find it weird. There's also this line about times have changed and the Bad Batch are so alone, but they have to trust themselves, which also means they might have to start trusting other people. So that the trust is at stake, and then they got to trust Omega again and again, and again, as she continues to just prove how valuable she is. And so I just like that idea too, especially like at one point they can't even trust Tech's data. There's no data he can give on this. This is unique, which is a great thing. So there was that one there. I'd love to start diving into, and then I went to somewhere else, but I wanted to kick that back to you.
Yeah, I love that idea of filtering it all through trust. Because they, in that great list of, they clearly had to talk about how to avoid the problems of the previous couple of episodes, right? Because it's hyper specific in a great way. But trust no one but my squad is such a great practical. Of course, yes, this is her literal squad that she is a part of, but just almost as an ethos, right? that you could take out into the galaxy, trust no one but your squad, whatever your squad is. But I love that you're extending that idea out to trust of almost like everything they're doing right now is a leap of faith. And that's highlighted so well by Tech going like, this isn't a mission. This isn't a military mission. You know, we have never rescued a child from slavers before. I don't have any data on that. It's a really, really great idea that you have to trust yourself when you're going into the unknown, which is such a classic coming of age Star Wars type lesson.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And it's scary. This is a scary world. And with Hunter actually, you know, discussing that this times have changed type of thing, and just, you know, you're out there on this balance beam of trying to get through this galaxy. It's changing around, and then stuff going on with you. I just liked it. I actually really liked that moment. The text just like, I got nothing here, guys. No algorithm, no data, nothing on my pad. We are in a brave new world, and we gotta figure out who to trust and how to trust ourselves even more.
It's also just a really great way to believably make the Bad Batch a little bit more capable of failure. Because we were so introduced to them as utterly unstoppable and better than everyone and worth a whole army. And like, yes, when we know like, okay, this is how we destroyed droids on a mountain, on a ravine, on a plateau, in a jungle. Like their main mission is destroying droids, you know.
Yeah.
But now they have different kinds of missions. So, and they don't have crosshair. So they're a little, you know, not as sure-footed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I that's a great point. Especially from even just this episode. Forget Clone Wars season 7, but this season, excuse me, this premiere. They're so great. That opening prior to Order 66. They are badass. And they still are, but yeah. There's so many. I love having these obstacles, and the obstacles coming from within are obviously going to be the more powerful ones for us as an audience to experience and go through with them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So what was the other idea that was pulling at you?
Follow me along here, because I was trying to find the best way to incorporate some of the big things that tie into the bigger picture, but not to jump ahead to that. And I went with this theme of dreams versus reality. The Empire brought peace, but the reality of that is emerging and what that actually is. Bad Batch is, they're going to rescue slaves in this episode. Echo specifically, we'll talk about that, what that means for him, but they're doing it for credits. The Bad Batch is left on their own accord, but now they need help to survive. They left because they made a choice, their own identity, but they can't be by themselves. And the reality of that is emerging and some of the internal struggles. So I just kind of went with that picture. Just, we all kind of have a dream and then the reality of the dream. It's not quite how it started, how it's going, but it's a little bit of that meat for
me. Yeah, no, I like that. I think that ties into that great funny beat where Tech is trying to express why they are clones on the run. And like, well, we had a difference in ideology. And Sid slash Carla from Cheers has a very, very Carla line. Like, fascinating. You think I'd care about that. But it a lot of it does go to, they have, in this episode, we see that they have perspectives or dreams, is the way you frame it. And they're seeing if they can make those real, right? They're seeing if they can follow through on what they believe.
Yeah. And how to do it. And we'll focus on the Echo one specifically, but it's like, obviously being rescued or rescuing people in need is something that's pretty close to Echo's heart.
Yep. Yep. For some pretty obvious reasons.
Yeah. And the fact that he, you know, hey, we're going to rescue slaves, and Tech's like, for credits. And just that look on Echo's face, it's like, yeah, you're right. But he still finds the humanity in that. He sticks to the morality of that. That's what he he's literally the one with Omega that's like taking them to freedom, and he's going to stay true to himself, even in this, you know, complicated real world reality of, yeah, we got to also make money. We got to survive and we got to keep going, but I get to still do this. And it still has great meaning to me. That's where it jumped out the most to me. And then the Empire, we know, when I say the Empire brought peace, we know that's a lie from the beginning, but the galaxy is figuring that out. And then you got the Zygerians who are just, it's almost in the background, but we're going to talk about it. I know, but just like, oh, this is great. This is great for us. The Empire's here. They brought a safe and secure society, and we are back in business. And that's just the harsh reality.
Oh, yeah. That is, and I think it is really purposeful. You know, it is not just going like, oh, the Bad Batch has got to find some people to fight. I think it is really going down the list of forces in the galaxy that we've met before and who is going to be immediately benefiting from the absence of the Republic and the absence of the Jedi. And the Zygerians are clearly high up on that list, you know?
Yeah.
I think that the main one that jumped out to me kind of dovetails with this idea of sort of shifting from ideals to reality and how does that work. I thought there was just a real steady theme of this idea of shifting identities, of kind of being in transition and going from one thing to the other, not fully formed yet, right? So Omega's journey in this episode, I really thought was about becoming more of a part of the unit. Previous episodes have dealt with, okay, she's got to stay. Okay, she wants to be a part of the family. She needs a place. They need to take care of her. They need to keep her safe. She's brave. But this one was so like, you are becoming a part of us for real. The comm device, right? That whole list of instructions on how to handle herself. Ultimately, she does function like a member of the unit and helps them escape. And, you know, gets an assignment from Hunter at the end of like, you and Echo go and do this part of the mission, you know? So she's really, really becoming a part of the group. I think there's even this idea that she is starting to take on not just the learning the rules, learning the ropes so she can become, you know, a good clone mercenary, whatever they are now, but she's starting to get these little bits of individuality. Like, I really felt like her picking up that Zygerian crossbow and kind of having it at the end, because it didn't pay off in this episode. She picked it up and like, keep up, but she still got it at the end. It's like, is that going to be her weapon of choice?
Right.
Is that her beginning to shape her sort of individuality of, that's what's so fun about the Bad Batch. They all have these different skills that translate to us as viewers of like, yeah, they're like action figures. They all got their secret trick, you know?
Right.
And it almost feels like, ooh, there's lots of little things in this episode that's maybe moving her even closer to taking Crosshair's spot, right? Of if a crossbow is going to be her signature weapon where she begins to show her individuality. We already got that moment in the first episode where she was a sharpshooter. You know, is right. she going to become the new sharpshooter with her Zygerian crossbow? And you know, they make a thing out of it at the top of the episode that her comm device is used to be Crosshair's, but he doesn't need it right now, you know?
Right.
So there's really a lot of her shifting into truly being a member of the squad.
Interesting takes. Does this make her the Kate Bishop of the Bad Patch? Hey, Ken made a Marvel reference.
I was going to say, man, if I had money on one of us mentioning Kate Bishop first, I would have put my money on myself, but I'm glad that you did.
I actually am a big fan of that Hawkeye run from Fraction. It's with Pizza Dog.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I love that stuff. Wonderful. And this transition and that great moment, it will come up again in the whimsy section, but just painting the doll and, you know, she's a bad batch, you know, like it's that was touching and sweet, but also there you go, right there for you.
Yeah, and that's one of the other things that I definitely grabbed onto in terms of all these different ideas coming together about shifting identity of Omega, even saying like, I don't want my doll to just be a trooper doll. Yeah. I'm going to make her a Bad Batcher and paint her, give her individuality. That's so powerful. And then a lot of different ways that this shifting identity theme I saw popping up of Sid's identity was obscured at first, right? That was a real issue of identity. And it was only clear to the more observant Omega. Mm-hmm. I think he's a little bit younger and a little bit more open in the Bad Batcher, kind of still struggling to be not be stuck in their ways, right? To not use the old ways. So then for the Bad Batch themselves, I thought that there was a ton in here about them shifting. Some of it's like just the core stuff from the episode, right? Of the fact that Echo was surprised by the word and even idea of mercenary, that they're like straight up doing mercenary stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, wow, I didn't think of that. That's like such a real world thing of like, you know, if you went in the 80s and put on tattered clothes and some pins and got a mohawk, and then somebody's like, oh, you're punk now. Like, what? Like,
yeah,
you're literally doing it right now, and you don't even see it, you know? How much that is like, wow, we just thought we were kind of doing another mission, right? You know? And that goes to when Tech sighs and goes, this is not a standard military operation. We're in this point of transition. And I really felt like there's also this moment of transition that goes to what you were talking about of Echo's relationship with what the mission was and whether or not he wanted to be a mercenary or a hero, frankly. The Zygerians make a point out of, with the Republic gone and with the Jedi gone, we can just, you know, get back to being slaves. They're being slave owners and taking what we want. And the Bad Batch is doing it for credits. But there's a real feeling of the Bad Batch being this little bit of hope in this dark world that they are shifting into the role of the Jedi. And I'm not saying like that's the story of like, and then they're going to take on ropes. I just mean like in instances where a Jedi would just be going around the galaxy and they would find somebody in need, that the Bad Batch is certainly going to be out for themselves, but they have enough morality as a group. Echo, and certainly I think Omega, you know, she looks at that clone trooper doll and says, don't worry, Moochie, we'll rescue you.
Yeah.
You know, it's about rescue. It's not like, don't worry, kid. Yeah, we'll get the credits. It is this perspective that being a clone to them, in particular being a Bad Batcher, wasn't just about getting the mission done, but to some of them, it was about doing the right thing. And that's only going to grow with Omega. And it's the Zygerians are advertising there is this massive loss in the galaxy, this massive space where the Jedi used to be, and no one's going to fill it. And then the Bad Batch comes along and gets their credits, but they do fill the role. They rescue Moochie and a bunch of other people from slavery.
Yeah, no, this is great. This is great. There's the shift in identity. You know, you could do a subtitle of discovering yourself, which also goes a little bit back to trusting yourself. And because this is a, shall I say, an easy moral win, right? Credits free some slaves. Yeah. Sign me up. I don't think they're going to, I don't think they'd do this mission if it was, go kill these people, right? Like, they're going to stay true to themselves or discover themselves as you shift. Cause I always think shifting identities and discovering your new path forward also includes really discovering who you are before and who you are now and all those kind of big concepts and those things. So I'm excited about what you're talking about as they move forward and they can start to really, really sculpt away what they were and be who they want to be in this world.
Yeah. And really take choices, feel like they can make choices about which jobs they take and why how that's going to, you know, how that's going to be affected by Omega and what they're teaching her about the galaxy. Right.
Indeed. Yeah.
They can't get away with sort of looking the other way because anytime that anything comes up, Tech is going to look it up and he's going to give her the dictionary definition of whatever horror show they're involved in. Like he's just like, this is what slavery is. Here you go. Right. And then you see it. You get to see it processed through a kind young person go, well, that's awful. Yeah. So she's not going to let them look away from what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. She's definitely representing a lot of heart and soul.
Yeah. And then, of course, just final thing of, you know, Moochie, the identity confusion with Moochie is not a small human or feline. Moochie is a Rancor. And the other thing for me, which is it's kind of a theme. I think there's some connection between Omega and Moochie of both being young. There's a little bit of a theme of like, don't take the kids for granted.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, Moochie ends up being many things, right? A victim, a threat, an ally, what appears to be a missed and beloved stolen pet from Jabba. So it, not just a monster, but many, many things. And then for Omega, I think it's just it was cool that to hear those great new squad regulations, don't wander off, keep my eyes and ears on my surroundings and trust no one but my squad. And if you get into trouble, use my comm and give my location. She does all of those things then in the episode.
Yeah.
Like literally. which is great. That's, you know, solid writing. But it is also kind of building up this like, yeah, don't worry. This is not a show about they're going to constantly have to be rescuing the kid. The kid is going to grow and be capable.
Yeah, which was a great moment and how it paid off and how it worked was a joy because I think you could sometimes get lost on, well, she's going back to the ship. I bet this is going to happen. And I'm okay sometimes when you're like, oh, it happened the way I thought it would, but it's such the journey there. And there's so many little joys and victories for this character that we're all rooting for Omega. We really are. She's I'd say it's pretty well received as a new Star Wars character, which the fandom doesn't always have a good track record with that.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to see just every week. She's just really endearing. Her journey's so endearing.
Ooh, endearing. I think that is the word of the podcast. That is the perfect word to capture Omega, I think.
Yeah.
So how did you feel like this episode reflected larger storytelling, morality, perspective of Star Wars?
Well, I went big in that when the dreams versus reality thing, it was definitely for what's happening in the larger story here. And I really think this story directly connects to this idea of the Empire taking over. You and I talk about that being so present in Solo of it's everywhere. That's what is happening. Crimson Dawn is right. They're not necessarily the Empire, but they're being allowed to grow. They're destroying the worlds just as much as the Empire. In fact, maybe even at times more on a case by case basis. And so it directly connects to all that and how that this is the reality of the world they're now living in. And we know it. And we just, you know, we are on Pantora watching them cheer. And this is how liberty dies almost again. That moment. And it's starting to unfold and it just, you know, Star Wars always asks you those big choices. And it's like, I think along the way, people are going to really start to learn, or maybe you grow up like Aiden Versio and you grow up in a perfect imperial sponsored world where this doesn't touch you until later on and you have to make that choice later. So I think this is, it's big picture stuff that just comes out of this crazy fun adventure. Like I said, it's in the back, it's very clear, but you could almost miss it if you're not listening to the lead Zygarian talking in the background saying we're not in the Republic anymore with the meddling Republic gone. It starts to fade away from almost the main action of the episode because you're focused a little bit on Omega. but it's so big to me. And it's the reality of this world they're living in. And you can't escape that.
Yeah. And if you really listen or watch it with subtitles, the Zygerian is giving a slight bit of a recap, almost like thematically or philosophically for the Zygerian 3-episode arc in season 4 of Clone Wars, yep. Talking specifically like, we're really good at being slave owners, and we know how to handle big, strong, tough people. We torture the person next to you that instead of you. If you can take it, great. We'll torture the person next to you that you care about, which is what they actively do in that arc, and how they control some of our more powerful characters. So that was really, really powerful to have this direct example of somebody that the Jedi stopped and the Republic stopped. And I think for me, that was the big thing. Definitely everything you're talking about of we're seeing the dream immediately turned to ashes of everyone is losing some level of freedom, and bad actors are thrilled that they can flourish, you know? But for me, that this episode was just a heartache for somebody who loves the Jedi.
Sorry, I'm not laughing at your pain, but yeah.
But it really was. I really appreciated it because this continues to be a great show that does have enthusiasm. Omega's endearing. There's hope. Rancors are reunited with their loved ones, but it's a dark world. The reminder in this episode twice that the Jedi are gone. Yeah. Of that exchange of like, well, the Jedi trusted him. You mean the Jedi who are all dead? And then the thing is Sid talking about like, yeah, I had it good, but they're gone now. There's a real reminder of their vacuum is felt immediately. And then, you know, the Zygerians are explicitly, openly thrilled about it. And I just found my mind going to some of the most early Jedi information that we ever heard is Star Wars fans. If you start with the actual movie Star Wars, right, of Obi-Wan Kenobi saying we were the guardians of peace and justice before the dark times. And it just hit me in the gut that all these moments is that's what's flashing on Obi-Wan Kenobi's face. It's not just the great cosmic battle for the light and the dark. It's not like we got kicked out of our temple and a bunch of us killed. It's about what the Jedi did for the galaxy. This is a concrete example of the Jedi would stop Zygerians. They might not go out to Tatooine where the Republic was not a presence, but the Zygerians, they would shut down, and we got to see them do that. Right. And now the Jedi are gone. The Guardians of Peace and Justice are gone. And that means dark times. And this is just a real practical, awful depiction of that.
Yeah. And it's interesting to hear you describe that. And you know, we love what's going on with the Bad Batch. You had said earlier, you know, them kind of sliding into the Jedi role in a way. It's almost sad because we know this is just the beginning of many, many years of darkness. So
yeah,
Bad Batch even more, but it's a tough hill to climb.
And it's in this one little micro interaction, they are able to slide into that Jedi role, but not, you know, probably not in the big picture, sadly. And then I also felt like with the big presence of Bib, Gamorrean guards, the shadow of Jabba over everything, if a little bit of that was to sort of emphasize, hey, remember Jabba's power is on the rise too. He and the Hutt Council were also already very powerful during the Clone Wars, to the point where the Jedi had to make a deal with gangsters,
right?
You know, going back to the Clone Wars movie, to get access to fight this war, already dubious. They have plenty of power. And now they have even more immediately. There's nothing in this episode where I feel like that's specifically what's being said about Jabba, but just almost seen right away as soon as the Bad Batch kind of gets into the shadows, gets into being mercenaries, you can't escape Jabba because his power is on the rise.
That's a great point. It's just like, yeah, they've taken this first step into a darker world, shall we say?
And the shadow of Jabba, a darker world. Yeah. Yeah, so I think those are the big things for me. I think all the contrast, I guess, between Omega finding family, you know, being a part of a group, a squad, and then the other half of the show being kind of just about the horror of the possibility of slavery, really did emphasize all the solo stuff you're talking about.
Yeah, look, and I'll even, you know, Rampage is a fun title. It also makes me think of the video games, but yeah, the Empire truly is rampaging all over the galaxy. So I'll even go that direction with it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, any other big picture thoughts?
No, let's get to a rampaging adolescent rancor.
Yeah, let's do it. All that in just a moment.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we're back to rampage through our discussion of Rampage. Roar! Ken's growl is better. There we go. It's that sinus infection. It does a lot for growls.
It's working for me.
Not good for the sinuses. Great for growling. I sound like a toy plush of a Rancor. Let's get into the action moments. Did you have some favorite action moments in this episode?
I didn't go a lot of specific notes because I just put like Moochie Rampage. But I do want to shout out Hunter versus the slaver, the head Zygerian. I didn't write his name down if he had one. And I'm pretty sure he did looking at the credits.
Rainy.
There you go. Just that fight where he pull. I really do like Hunter's little knife that he pulls out. And then we've seen some of the light whip, pull the whip closer type of actions. I'm thinking of some stuff in Last Jedi and the throne room scene, but I just like to hear it's a reminder. Hunter's pretty good at this fighting stuff too. Cause that's a good little flying kick there. And it knocks Rainey down. He's a down for the count there. So I like that little moment.
Yeah. The headbutt and a kick, right?
Yeah.
Can't go wrong. A lot of headbutting in Bad Batch as there should be. Yeah, I think the action was really, really fun in this episode. Monster on monster, and we cared about Moochie, but there's been a lot of different kinds of action in these first several episodes of Bad Batch, and this is one where I could really, really enjoy the action because, for me, the morality was pretty clear. Go ahead and beat up the slave owners. Go ahead and absolutely smash the slave traders, you know, so the morality of the action was very crystal clear for me.
No gray areas here, friend.
Yeah, not for me. So a couple of specific moments I like. I really liked when Wrecker kicked the giant rock and face planted the Zygerian.
Points for that. Yeah,
it's a great action moment, a great comedy moment. And you know, there was that sense from Wrecker of like, we're only tied up for a minute. We'll get out of here. Don't worry. And needing to distract and save Omega from being found. Just great all around. The Moochie Rampage there, I could have written down almost every moment, but I think my favorite was the casually backhanding the speeder full of Zygerians. They immediately go flying in the explosion. Like, bang.
I love Moochie taking a big bite out of that dragon. What'd you call it again? I didn't write that one down.
Breezak.
Breezak. That makes, there you go. I love that. Just, it was like biting a sausage and breakfast. Just.
Yeah. The Moochie versus Breezak. That was great. Cause that was, you know, talk about Star Wars pulling in other references, mm-hmm. other genres. That was King Kong versus Godzilla, little mini version of it. Right. That was a data bank brawl, like we used to do and we'll probably do again someday. But that was just totally like, wow, two big monsters with really different abilities. How will they fight against each other? And I love that it all came back to tail biting.
Well, life comes back to tail biting. And some of the scene when they were kind of taking on the Breezak alone or when Moochie emerged, I had some Fallen Order flashbacks.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Being hunted by many large animals. Mm-hmm. In that game. So those were my favorite action moments. Any other action moments slid into moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness?
I was going to say, I was like, oh, I have one more. And I was like, no, yeah, it's action, but it's definitely comedy. So, yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, so let's dive into that. What were your favorite moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness?
In terms of just whimsy, we seem to focus that a lot in this in these discussions of Bad Batch because of Omega and even Wrecker. I did enjoy Wrecker's gonk squats. Good way to get a workout in, just squat with gonky on. But Omega's joy at her wrist communication device was just palpable.
Endearing. Yeah, it was super funny. And out of all of the little calm moments, I think the I found Sid was great because she's not using it as a toy. She's communicating. And she's communicating that she noticed something that they were not paying attention to. And also, like, not quite in the range of distance she needed to be. But that was great.
Yeah. And the little point, the little, like, point up. I found her.
I found Sid. Point up. Yeah. Great. Great. Yeah. What else you got?
I enjoyed... And I was like you, too. It's like you hear a voice and you're like, God, that voice sounds so familiar. I'll wait to the credits, right? And, it's Rhea Perlman. So just to go back the second time and when Sid says, are you fresh out of the tube? I'm like, Carla would say that.
It's such a great clone insult. Yeah. Or Insult. I'll go with that.
Yeah. It's insult. Yeah,
it was great. Absolutely great.
Yeah.
I liked Echo in general, just kind of having the lead that this was his idea. This is a little bit more of an Echo focused episode. But I liked when they got to Sid's place and he said, "This is the place," and is kind of dumpy and run down. And Tech says, "Charming." it was a one quick line. It didn't even quite register with me the first time I watched it, but I watch it again. It's like, that's an interesting detail of Tech's character. Like, you know, all the different places that they have had to stay or bunk, that like the idea that Tech would be like somebody who knows the thread count of sheets. Like, it was a kind of a new idea, but it also made perfect sense of like, oh, this is a dump. I like clean that. Bars.
Yeah. Tech's like, there's 2,492 germs on this table alone.
Exactly. So I found that really charming.
Tech's endearing in his own way too. Endearing is the hubris of the Bad Batch.
He is. And there, another great Tech moment I like. In this one, I already mentioned it, but that, yes, well, we separated due to a fundamental difference in ideology.
It's so great. Because Tech, this is like two or three times now where Tech's just like stating big themes of Star Wars as great jokes.
Yeah. And that's what I really liked about it, is there is always a tension in Star Wars. If you can absolutely sit down and watch this episode and say, this was a fun adventure about, you know, a young kid named Omega, and she rescues an animal friend, and it's great and it's fun and charming, you know, or you can kind of dive into like what all is going on. This is about dreams and shifting identities. And I like that Tech is sort of like, yes, no, I'm drilling down to the core. You know, I'm always writing essays and giving you the theme statement answer to a situation, you know?
Yeah. And it's just great. It's great comedy and character, but it's also great insight. We laugh. We love Tech here. And I know Tech is rising on your list of characters there, Joseph, but like, it just, I really love the moments, because it's almost like you could take Tech's quotes and just kind of give them to fans for discussion points.
Yes. Yes. But I love that it's, just the front of Tech's mind of like, there's a reason that we're doing this. There's a reason that we have to do this, is that what they were wanting us to do is unacceptable. It's like, it's also like, good on you, Tech. You're right.
Yeah. It's like Tech could be like, you know, some of the people in the Empire, you know, they weren't bad. And Tech would be like, well, they all were given a choice and they slipped morally.
Exactly. Couple more for me. I think maybe my favorite comedy moment in this episode, perhaps my favorite comedy moment in the Bad Batch so far, high praise for me, when Sid says, clearly the kid's the brain of your operation, and then Omega and Wrecker do that small high five in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw some people tweeting about that, and it's the Wrecker Omega big brother, little sister dynamic is wonderful. Just one.
Yeah, and just the development of Wrecker, because you and I both had that concern, awareness in that first episode of how do you not get repetitive with Wrecker, and really developing that big brother perspective and developing a character who's not just excited about violence. That's his most exciting thing he can do. Right. But then he's also just kind of excited and enjoys life. And like, you did a good thing. High five.
Yeah. No, there's great value to him, even in these dark times and this trouble, just to have that light of just kind of positive joy, to be able to have that emerge when you need it. And that's where Wrecker is coming through a lot, and I enjoy it.
Yeah. I think there's also just something really funny and appropriate to Wrecker's character of like, hey, that Trandoshan lady just said that you're smarter than me. High five.
Yeah, it's so great.
No ego about not being smarter than Omega.
Yeah.
Other moments for you?
I mentioned, I'll fail to do the accent with any level of skill, talent, or respect, but I do just love Omega say, now she's a bad batch. It's endearing. It's just endearing. That's our word of the day. Woo-hoo!
It is.
I love that. And the same load, around Mochi, when Omega's caught and just says, I wasn't sneaking, I was unlocking. It's a great reveal. And then Echo delivering the Rancor is Moochie was delivered the best sitcom slash 80s action adventure just energy. And I really enjoyed that one. That was a great moment.
It was Echo as Joey from Friends, right? Like, they're the, what are you talking about?
What?
Record scratch. Yeah. Two other ones for me. I love Sid calling Hunter, you, dark and broody, my office. Yeah. So yet another moment of character development for Hunter to really kind of see Hunter through somebody else's eyes, you know?
Totally.
Like, oh, he's the one who's always dark and brooding. Great. Final one for me is, I think I'm going to want to track these every episode, the moment where Tech looks up a thing from Star Wars on Wikipedia. When he quickly Googles Rancor in order to figure out how to defeat it. Rancors adhere to social hierarchy. You have to challenge the Alpha for authority. I absolutely love that. Yeah. And I lied. My final one is the one that I moved from combat to comedy. I did love just the general idea that Tech gives Wrecker the information. That's how it works. Of that's what it works like when they're being a team. Of like, oh, you have to fight Moochie and prove that you're just as strong, and then Moochie will respect you. And then that every joke and every image is great, but when they're getting tired out, there's this one very quick moment where Moochie kind of gently hits Wrecker, and then Moochie holds her arms out like, how about that? What about that? What do you got?
Well, combined with Wrecker giving that little pat on her head towards the end, I call it a drunken bar fight where, you know, just they're swinging at nothing. It could easily have just been dumb comedy, and there's some simple comedy in it, but it just worked. It came from the character of Wrecker. It made me really a fan of Moochie if I wasn't already, and I was, but just it was a great little moment. Yeah, I had the same thing.
Yeah, it is a great one, though, those arms up. That's going to be highly gifable. Any other moments of comedy or whimsy or weirdness for you?
It was just kind of around Wrecker. There's some great quotes, she's doing fine on her own, and then towards the end of, oh, that's a good Rancor. Like, wasn't send that to a dog, you know?
Yeah. It made a lot of sense to have Wrecker truly bond with Moochie.
It really did. Well, 'cause it wasn't even like he was fighting her to harm. He's just like, oh, yeah, we can get a fight, and it's great.
Yeah, no, and I love that. That dynamic of like, Tech, is there any way that I can punch my way through this problem? Like, cool, I can. You know?
Yeah, that's great.
And it's fun to see him unleashed, right? Because Wrecker's clearly like much stronger. He's got superhero strength. And Ava, like, here's somebody I can really pummel.
Well, yeah, and you know, everyone having a role on the team, it's valuable, and that's what he's doing those gonk squats for.
Yeah, gonk squats. All right, let's get into canon and lore and connections to other stories, unless you have any more comedy.
No.
Okay, so there's a lot in this one, but I want to start with the Rancor of it all, right? So we both did our own independent Wikipedia deep dives, and we're talking off air and came to the same conclusion. Moochie, very clearly female in canon as we know it. The famous Rancor from Return of the Jedi, Patissa, is male. Seemed to be that the story was that Jabba had control of Moochie. The word reunited, Sid says, reunited. Moochie seems to recognize Bib. So how did you read this story? Did you just read this as, yeah, of course, this is one of the things Jabba does. He collects Rancors. Or did you read this as some sort of like, this is setting something else up?
It's funny. We were talking off air, like you said. It's like, now I'm doubting myself. Is there something bigger picture that I'm missing? But no, I took it as just one of maybe a few. I'm familiar with Patissa, the name Patissa, which is, you know, you and I did not grow up with that name.
No.
It was something that came a little later. It was just Rancor and Rancor Keeper, not Malakili and Patissa. But I took it as just an additional one, not the same one. But who knows these days, right? Who knows?
Yeah. I think there is something just a little bit different in the introduction of Bib. Like, we'll talk about Bib, but this goes to the Rancor story of Bib Fortuna is a character who pops up in canon a lot. because Jabba is a big deal in the galaxy. It's normal that characters would encounter Jabba because he's a huge power player. And if you're in the shadows, you're going to, you know, encounter a huge gangster boss. Yeah. And then Bib pops up because Bib is, like this hand, the episode says, a right-hand guy. But that introduction of Bib to kind of like set up this mystery of him, you know, like not fully showing his face. I think there was something in that that made me feel like on my first viewing of like, is that setting up a reveal? And I don't feel like it was ultimately other than, hey, it's Bib.
Right.
Bib's back, everybody.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the fact that there's perhaps a continued relationship with Sid in the Bad Batch and maybe a continued relationship with Sid and Jabba, I mean, I definitely would want more in a way. I'm not expecting it. And that's just my reaction at, you know, two and a half times watching this episode of just like great mention, purposeful mention to some of the big themes we've talked about but also at the same time, fun seasoning. But, you know, we could get an entire episode with Jabba asking for the Bad Batch.
Yeah. And I'd feel great about that. Would you?
I totally would feel. Yeah, totally would feel. And I'll tell you what, it is weird seeing Bib now, and Matthew Wood voices Bib in this one too, knowing Bib's end, his true end now.
Well, yeah, and that it's interesting to me knowing that there is even more very specific connective tissue between Book of Boba Fett, between Fennec right. Shand and Bib Fortuna. It's really interesting to see if that's going anywhere or if that's just the will of the Force.
Oh, yes.
So in terms of the Rancor part of the story, the Rancor has always been an interesting creature because it's a scary monster that Luke must defeat. So it's not devoured. But there's always, I think, been that tension of that moment with Mala Keely in the whimper as Batista dies is actually very sad. And so having another Rancor, Batista's mom, maybe, who knows? Batista's sister, mate, whatever the story is, or if there is even a story, just another Rancor. Did it make you, meeting Mucci and really connecting to Mucci, did it make you feel even worse for Batista?
No, it really did. And then, you know, nothing against Luke. Look, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And what's the Gamorrean guard has a name, Jabunka or something?
Juknuck, I think.
Yeah.
Or Jubnuck.
And then in Legends, he survives and dear God.
Jubnuck.
So, Jubnuck. There you go. Yeah, no, it did. And even learning a little bit more about Mala Keely in Aftermath, which is kind of really the first time you learned about Batista's name is more than that. Yeah, no. And look, as a lover of animals like myself and a lot of us are, you know, come on, Mucci, talking about endearing. And by the end of it, I want to pet a big old Rancor face. I want to say, oh, I shall go Rancor.
Yeah, yeah. The whole show is really feeling like it is on a mission to treat animals better.
Well, even the Breezak doesn't die, right? And I was one. I was like, oh, is this finally going to happen? We finally going to get a creature killed on this show? And no, which I'm fine with.
It's just a stark contrast to other Star Wars storytelling, like that Clone Wars episode that we discussed relatively recently when Obi-Wan and Quinlan Vos are teamed up and they're, you know, chasing Cad Bane and they're in a, you know, strange world and a big creature grabs Obi-Wan and he just stabs it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's a slight bump in the road, you know, and it just seems like Bad Batch is like, we're not going to do that.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
All right. Any other Rancor thoughts?
No, other than, look, you know, if it's a completely new retelling and canon, it just would be, it'd be a little weird, but I, you know, stay loose. When you, it's like you're standing off first base to steal second. Keep your weight on both feet so you can go back or forth.
Yeah, exactly. I enjoyed this episode for meeting this Rancor and for how this Rancor played into this story. And if at some point it becomes, oh, this is the origin story and that's the new canon, so be it.
So be it.
Rancor. All right. Let's go to Ord Mantell.
Let's do it.
That was fun. Were you excited by that, the being on Ord Mantell?
Yeah, no, it's because it's one of those first references that you grow up with, or whenever you discover Empire, and it's inspires so much imagination, and we don't spend a lot of time on here, we really don't, so I love going there, love the design, and we're seeing a lot of different urban environments, both in Mandalorian and Bad Batch that I'm enjoying.
Yeah, a couple of things that I really liked about it. Ord Mantell has always been one of those great tip of the iceberg moments of storytelling. Like we always talk about the casual mention of the Clone Wars, but Han saying in Empire, you know, the bounty hunter we ran into on Ord Mantell changed my mind. And there are in Legends and EU multiple different creators taking a stab at telling the story of that bounty hunter in current canon. I think it's still ambiguous. And then Ord Mantell does have a big canon appearance in the Son of Dathomir comic book, the comic book adaptation of the kind of big finale for the Shadow Collective. So you can spend some time on Ord Mantell. So it's just fun to have a planet that's kind of steeped in such history with our fan relationship with Star Wars. But then in terms of just design, I love that we saw that it's looks like kind of a rough planet. It's got these cityscapes that are a little isolated. You know, it's not a huge sprawling city. And we go to this new city that's a little run down, and in text words, charming. But then I love that the big battle happens in, you know, old Ord Mantell city. It's one of the things that I always love about Star Wars, when it really evokes that wherever we are in the timeline, there's a long, long history before. And being in this, collapsed, it looks like, you know, ruins of some, you know, Roman civilization, right? From real world perspective, and wondering, like, did this city fall 10 years ago or thousands of years ago?
Yeah, even had kind of the old ruins of the Dragon Pits and King's Landing and Game of Thrones for me. And also ties to, you know, the history and this lived-in type of world that goes directly to George, directly to Episode 4, directly to the dirt and grime on screen there versus typical traditional sci-fi to that point. And that's Star Wars continues. This isn't like a first-time connection, clearly, but it doesn't, Kamino goes to a Close Encounters of the Third Kind vibe. But this keeps that tradition going of stuff was here before and will be after us. You're just getting this part of the story.
Yeah, old lived-in universe. Great point. Another canon thing I wanted to call out is Sid's ominous helmet collection.
Yes.
In her office. What did you think of that?
I'm like, more proof. You know, everyone keeps calling the show gorgeous and beautiful and breathtaking, and it looks the best. But a lot of times it's seeing a spaceship travel or almost land or going to some great sweeping vista. Her office was my favorite part of this episode. It felt 3D. It felt real. And so those helmets popped off the screen, and I'm sure there's some other things in the background I'm missing. But I don't know, man. I had some thoughts. I'm like, was she gifted for helping? I wouldn't want it to be because some kind of trophy for hunting. I didn't have the answer, but I couldn't escape it.
Are these fallen friends that she once knew from working with Jedi? Yeah, it did look like there was one kind of darker in the shadows that looked Mandalorian, that looked like a paler Mandalorian helmet to me.
There you go.
So that made me happy that it isn't just clones.
Right.
Because then the Bad Batch is being really, really unobservant. To say, all right, we'll trust you, a woman whose walls are filled with the helmets of our fallen brothers.
Yeah, or she just collects, Black Series replica helmets or something like that. And one thing that I loved about Sid, I mean, there's a little bit of she's old grizzled weirdo vibe in Star Wars. Loved
absolutely.
A little bit of the Dexter connection of the Jedi go to her for some real world help. Love that. But then I just don't know. I don't know if she's going to keep any secrets. I like this about the character.
Yeah. And you got the vibe that she could really be like, the reason the Jedi trusted me is, you know, I have a code and I keep my word and I keep secrets. Right. Or it could be like, while it behooves me, I'll keep your secret. But I kind of got you under my thumb now because I know that you're valuable. I know you're really wanted. You know, that's a great bit of ambiguity there.
Yeah, no, that was definitely a hold it over your head moment for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So then going to, we've already discussed it a bit, but of course the Breezak there, the Zygerian's big flying lizard that did first appear in that Clone Wars season 4 arc with the Zygerians, the episode Slaves of the Republic in particular. Right. And then the Zygerians themselves have been mentioned many places, have their that big moment, moment to shine in horror in that Clone Wars arc in season right. 4, where ultimately they are in cahoots with Dooku in their operation on their planet. Kadavo is disrupted by the Jedi and the Republic, who, as they mention.
Yeah. And again, yeah, with the Zygerians, you go to Wikipedia and look up in the appearances list. It's sizable in canon. They're just, they always get mentioned. They always, they're out there. So it's almost, and it's kind of this weird Star Wars animation tradition to have them in an episode or an arc. So it's great to see them there.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you have any other thoughts? We already kind of talked about their meaning and their presence, but anything else there that you wanted to touch on?
No, but it definitely is one of those big connections. And again, the Empire rampaging over the galaxy and is what it is. We talk, when you hear us talk about emotional canon or those kind of through lines, this is what we mean. This is a part of it, what they represent to the story. And this does connect to Solo. It does connect to Wobani and Rogue One and all those kind of things. So I love the use of the characters here. It's not just a fun appearance for a checklist.
Yeah, exactly. The specific line I wrote down, with the meddling Republic gone, we can return to Kadavo and rebuild what was taken from us. That is just straight up. The dark times that Obi-Wan was talking about are right here.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we had some Feline. Zizer fans, I'm sure, delighted. They have appeared other places in Star Wars, but I always associate mm-hmm. them with Zizer from Shadow of the Empire. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, okay. You know that game. I never got past Hoth, so it doesn't connect. I know I get the reference, and I see it, and I love that it's there.
Yeah, you never had any deep emotional connection to the whole Shadows of the Empire.
I did not. I mean, I couldn't take down a walker in that opening level.
Yeah. Yes, no, and I totally understand. Totally understand. But they have, I think that's also interesting because obviously they're not all involved in the criminal underworld, but that's a lot of the times that we have seen that species in canon. So it also evokes that. So,
yeah,
very cool and very pulling from. Hey, if you love Star Wars, we're going to pull from everywhere, from Buggles the Vorpak to to Resistance, to Shadows of the Empire. Any other thoughts on Bib Fortuna, Gamorrean guards, the Shadow of Jabba? You're happy to see them? You're not like Bib shouldn't have been there?
No. Bib pops up and there's it's funny because Bib is I'm always a issue or three behind on the comics, but Bib's kind of in the main Marvel line talking to Lando right after Empire, and which is kind of a weird interaction right now, but for me at least. But I like Bib in a way. It is that connection you talked about, the transition of Clone Wars era and slowly working in and letting you know that this is happening, and Jabba is, you know, we got over 19 years to go till we really see him towards the end, but he's rising in power. He's already in power, but gaining more. And they're, so I like Bib being there. The Gamorrean guards, these ones are they're not the thin fighting shape Gamorrean guards, classic ones, but yeah, it's comforting in a way. And it's not just nostalgia pop for me. It has a great purpose as well.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is, for me, one of those things, like, it's not just thrown in out of love or out of, ooh, I recognize that. It's thrown in out of narrative connection. That makes sense to me. And then, of course, the Bounty Hunter Guild got mentioned, which was great and fun to hear that all tied together.
Yeah. Yeah, I was expecting her to say, here's your tracking fob.
yeah, that will be interesting to see how much of the fobs and the chain codes come together mm-hmm. here in Bad Batch. Any other canon ideas or mentions that you wanted to discuss?
No, I think that's a lot. I mean, there was a lot of big ones, but no, I think that for me, that's nothing I can think of.
Yeah. All right, well then let's get into anything we disliked or questioned. You started this episode of our podcast by saying that this was not your favorite episode of Bad Batch. And then we just discussed all the things we loved.
Yeah.
So what was it that challenged you?
It wasn't even a challenge. It just, like I said, it was like, oh, I got it. You know what I mean? Like, I got it. I get what they're doing and there's some fun stuff. And I don't use the word filler. It's all building and it all connects to what we discussed, but just compared to some of the things that came before and measured against my desires for what I think is going to happen. This is one of those episodes. It's like, yeah, this is a nice, sweet, comfortable spot. When I revisit it, that's why when I said it reminds me of some Clone Wars episodes, and you and I are doing this great rewatch, and there's some episodes that are like, you just go, yeah, okay, cool. Can't wait to get to the bigger arcs. It doesn't mean those ones are bad. And this had that vibe all the way around for me. But by focusing on what I love and by focusing on what is there in these episodes that connect to the big themes, I enjoy it just as much as the others in a way. But this on a rewatch, this might be the one where I'm making a salad and I join in halfway.
Yeah, I think this one's fascinating to me because time will tell how important of an episode it is, because it is definitely continuing the story, I think, in some significant forward movement on Omega's character and identity in this episode. But is it going to be like, yeah, this is the one-off adventure, and 8 episodes from now, they'll go back and get another gig from Sid, or is this setting up the new normal?
Yeah, and look, they learn who Fennec Shand is. They rescue free slaves and the Mucci. There's so much there, and that's why we don't believe in that concept of filler. I just reject it as a principle in Star Wars. Maybe a sitcom or something in the anime. I know where a lot of it came from. But in Star, in these type of shows, it just doesn't exist for me. And so you're absolutely right. I get excited by going, where can you look back and figure out, hey, what was there for us that we didn't see at the time?
Yeah, exactly. But I also understand where you're coming from, where there is, you know, we're loving the Bad Batch and there's a hunger for them to really develop and figure out what is the deal with Omega. Are they going to get Crosshair back? Like all of these kind of big questions. And then an episode can feel like an adventure of the week of like, cool. Yeah. The Rancor and Rizak beat the crap out of each other. That was great. That was fun. But is this adventure moving the big picture story forward? And I definitely thought about that while I was watching. And I feel like there's a lot from this episode that is in retrospect going to feel like these are some big steps forward.
Yeah. Agreed.
The only other thing for me, I already mentioned, I don't even dislike it. It was just a curiosity that the way Sid's initial conversation with Bib was framed felt like it was, by not revealing that it was Bib, there was building to something bigger than, yeah, it's Bib. I don't suggest actually swinging a Tuca cat, but swing a Tuca cat and you're going to find Bib in Star Wars, Bib Fortuna. So it felt a little like I didn't understand the point of kind of setting up a mystery for a reveal.
Because now when the hologram's going on, my reaction, I'm sure yours too, was like, oh, I think that's Bib, and then, oh yeah, it was Bib.
Yeah, please don't restrict me to just Bib lips. I want to see a Bib face, come on. Yeah, so happy that we got to see full Bib face. That's gross and I don't even know why. Anyway, Ken, do you have some hopes for the next episode of the Bad Batch?
Not even necessary for next week. I can't wait for Crosshair's big return. They're holding them out for good reason. You know, we're not really seeing a story right now. We know he's got some things going on. He's not just over there going, yeah, let me go get in a fight and kill my old friends. There's stuff going on, stuff we're going to learn. So I'm by pulling it back a little bit, not giving me Crosshair, I'm just more excited for the return of Crosshair.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good point of not knowing each week if it's going to be kind of two stories going. It's the Bad Batch and then also what's going on with Crosshair, or is there going to be an episode that's no, this is just now Crosshair's journey for an episode. Like, it's fun to not know exactly when and how much Crosshair we're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
A couple things for me. I so loved this ending that it just had that sort of smash cut from Hunter going, oh, geez. Yeah. And that chord. I would be thrilled if the next episode picked up exactly there. It just starts with Hunter staring in the chord. Like, yeah. What are you talking about? What are you holding over me? I don't think it'll do that, but that would be awesome. I do hope that it continues, that the next episode has the Bad Batch being very proactive. I really like seeing that of, okay, well, we got this amount of information, or now we really clear that we need even more money to really pick up one of the strands, or for them to really be like, we are going here to do X, you know?
Yeah, I like that.
Then in terms of what I guess I'll call not Chekhov's gun, but Wrecker's headache.
Yes.
I hope that we get to that because it's been, you know, underlined a couple episodes now. And I'm really excited to see what that's about.
Yeah, I have great anticipation for Crosshair with some like excitement. I have anxiety on Wrecker's head.
Well, do you have dreams or hopes for Wrecker's head?
I do. Dreams, not fears. Yeah, definitely that this is chip related, obviously, and there's some kind of something's going to happen bad, man. I think he'll survive, maybe, but the chip is this dangling participle of the show that's just kind of floating above us here, and Omega being like, oh yeah, your chip, I can tell you what that's about, and Tech working on it, finding the chip. And knowing some of the stuff we've seen the chips do in Clone Wars episodes in the past, that's my fear, anxiety for it.
Yeah, I think when I saw this episode, it was called Rampage, and very early on, we had the, anything wrong? Yeah, no, I'm fine, groaning, holding his head. They're like, oh, Rampage is because his chip is going to go off, and he is just going to become randomly violent. And with all of the great buildup of the big brother, little sister vibe, how horrific is that going to be for Omega, you know?
Yeah.
So I have hopes that poor Wrecker can get his head fixed. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on, Ken?
Well, we did mention the Echo stuff, but I think it bears kind of repeating of just Echo being focused on rescuing and freeing people, slaves in this case, something that is close to his heart. And I love that about him. And you mentioned a little bit more Echo in this episode. And I think we're all kind of still waiting for a big Echo led episode, but I love what they're doing with him and his past. And it's not acknowledged. He doesn't have to say, oh, I was once freed by, it's there. It's in the character and you know it and you get it. And I liked it.
Yeah. It's there when you look at him that he has had his agency taken away and that he would feel even more strongly about that.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah. I think the only other thing for me is every once in a while, we want to take a moment to be sure to shout out the music in this episode. Mm. Damn, this had such range. You know, it had everything from kind of light, fun comic music to when Omega was sneaking in, there's a kind of little jazzy heist music. And then when the monsters are showing off, there's like great epic kaiju fight music. It was just such a great range of music in this episode.
It's so good. And Kevin Kiner does such a good job with it. Talk about dreams, but also anxieties. He's tweeted a few times about, oh, I just did the music for the Bad Batch finale and I'm crying. And it's like, well, if you're crying, what are you doing to us? What's going to happen?
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. I'm a little concerned now because I am really, really connecting to these characters and really want them to make it through the darkness. But speaking of going back to the light from the darkness, we're going to wrap up with a fun light question. If you could have a figure or toy of any character or moment from this episode, Ken, what do you want?
Well, look, Moochie looks like a Funko Pop. I mean, the design is Funko Pop. I have like the Rancor Funko Pop. So we definitely got it.
What's a Funko Pop, Tech? Look it up.
Yeah. A Funko Pop is a cheap plastic toy, overpriced, collected by many. Yes. So that would be, in fact, you were with me when I got my Rancor Funko.
I have a photo of it. Yeah.
Photo. Oh my. Vegas, I believe. So we need that. But also I'm also a collector of, by collector, I mean, I have like two or three of them, of the Nerf, Chewbacca bowcaster, Han Solo Nerf gun, the orange ones and everything. So we do need a Nerf crossbow of the Zygarian crossbow that Omega now has.
Oh yeah, get some good Nerf action. This is a toy, unlike the Com.
Yeah,
I almost put this in the comedy section, but I had so many. I think I need a specific action figure of Gonky the Gonk droid with hiding action, where you can just press Gonky down and make Gonky be a box.
Yes. Yes.
That was a great moment. And then I'm going back to my love of those old cinema scenes sets where they would have three action figures posed in a scene. Loved those so much. Power of the Force and Phantom Menace both had those. I would love a cinema scene of Wrecker and Moochie just bashing each other while Tech just stands there and watches. Which there's a little space where like he gets the fight going. He gives Wrecker the info. And then we cut away, and then the rest of the Bad Batch comes back and they ask Tech how it's been going, and he's just been sitting there watching.
Watching him. Tech's the best.
Yep. So great. Collecting data if they ever have to fight a Rancor again.
Yeah. I'm inputting data.
Inputting data. So that is our big look at the Bad Batch Episode 5, Rampage. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
I would love to, especially if you're relatively new to the podcast feed. You discovered us while searching for Bad Batch coverage, or maybe found us in some of our rebroadcasts on YouTube. We are Force Center Podcast. We found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. You can like our Facebook page, Force Center Podcast. We always offer an audiobook on us for you. Go try it out at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. That's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Also, we're available in a lot of different spots, but try Amazon Music and Spotify too. Emerging young company, just giving it a go in the podcast world. We're there and a lot of other places as well. Just search. And if we're not on a podcast catcher of choice, let us know. We'll try to get there. You can follow me at Catnapsuck. Go to my website, catnapsuck.com. Also check out the GPA.fun where I work with my pals over there doing silly, crazy things to try to make you laugh. Joseph, where can they find you?
Laughter is great. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok with my handle at Joseph Scrimshaw. And then you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all of my other comedy adventures. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for both Moochie and Patisa, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.